Yeah, that was called Dead Air. It's technically not supposed to happen. Joining me all the way from Tampa, Florida, the only other place in the United States where I think it's moderately warm is John Ubaldi.
It's not warm today. It's in upper 30s this morning, and it's probably about 41, 42 degrees. It is cold.
That's not cold, okay? I know what cold is. That isn't cold. So you, hey, you can quit your whining too.
Well, we all didn't come from North Dakota, or.
Well, I didn't come from there. I was born. You and I. You and I are born. In the same place, man.
I know we are, but you lived up in North Dakota at some time.
That's right. That's right. So the rest of you whiny ass babies, just shut up, okay? I will tell everybody when it's cold, and I have. It's not cold till it's 10 below. Okay, that's at that point, you cannot go out and you can't PT anymore. It's just too cold, and so that's when we begin to shut that down. That's when you know it's cold. So, you guys are 50 degrees from that. Okay, so, turn your heaters on. Sorry you don't have automatic car starters and seat heaters, but suck it up, you bunch of whiny babies. Oh, by the way, it's going to be 71 here, so, whatever.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's it. That's
funny, though. It's going to be 71 in California. We're not even going to hit the 70s till next week or something.
That's too bad for you guys. What about that? Why don't you just go jump in the Gulf? What is that? That's like 82?
Yeah, it's actually 80 degrees. So once it gets above 80,
you go ahead and start swimming, man. All right. First of all, Happy New Year. How was your holidays? You do anything exciting?
It was good. I had a good Christmas, good New Year. Everything was good. How about yourself?
Well, you know, it was great. And I'll tell you why. My sister lost both of her kids 21 years ago in a domestic violence incident.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I would tell you it is my youngest daughter Colleen and I went up to Sacramento and spent the weekend before Christmas with her, and it's the happiest I've seen her in 21 years. So even before Christmas started, it was already Christmas because I say this. But I know a lot of people that have been through tough stuff. I don't know anybody who's been through anything more difficult than my sister has. My sister's a stud. A lot of people, if they had to live with the memories that she lives with, would not have been able to do it. And she, on a daily basis, you know, continues to be part of our family. And I know that you and I both know that's not easy when you...
Well, I would say, because I lost, I had a friend of mine who lost her son 2 years ago. But that's not the same of what your sister's going through. To lose two children the way, the manner she lost it, that shows the strength of your sister. Because I remember when we were on active duty, you described what had happened. That's a pain. I don't know how you get through something like that.
Yeah, you know, again, how do you get through something like that? And again, so, you know, one of the things I would tell, and I've used her really example to inspire others. I said, hey, you know, and, you know, we both know people that struggle with things they've seen and things that have happened and whatnot. And I know, and at some point, I mean, you know, I'll look at guys and I'll say, you know, it can get worse than what you experience.
And, you know,
they look at you and, you know, and I said, look, you know, my sister lost both of her kids and she was there when it happened. and they died of gunshot wounds. And I said, so everything that we've experienced, it didn't touch our kids. So, I mean, you can only imagine after 21 years of seeing her happy, you know, she moved back to Sacramento. She moved away to get away from, I think, some of the things that happened in the aftermath and that were difficult. And my youngest sister lives in Indianapolis, so she went to Indianapolis and has lived there. And my younger sister is awesome. And her kids, but, you know, my sister moved home here recently and is around our extended family and her friends and is just having a wonderful time. So so that was the start of Christmas. Yep. And so, I mean, you can imagine how happy that would make you feel. And then after that, my oldest son, John, who's stationed in Quantico, he came out with his wife, Susie, and our grandson, Finn. And we had an awesome time doing Christmas with them. And then Notre Dame beat LSU on New Year's Day, so that was great. And so,
well, there was some good football. I mean, I was watching intermittent between the Georgia-Oklahoma game. That was just back and forth. There were some good games over the weekend.
That was one of the best bowl games I've ever seen, the Georgia, the Rose Bowl.
I mean, I flip it back on, Georgia fumbles, Oklahoma runs it in. Oh, I guess this guy's Georgia, and they just kept battling back. That was a good game, really good game. And then Alabama did well against Clemson, so we'll see what happens this week.
Yeah.
What is it, Monday or Tuesday they play?
Monday. Nick Saban wants to play on Tuesday, but he doesn't have that kind of juice yet.
No, he doesn't have that kind of pull yet.
Yet, okay. The highest paid employee in the state of Alabama. He might get there, though.
Well, like Jim Harbaugh, the highest paid employee in Michigan.
Not for long, though, because he keeps losing, right? When you don't beat
if you can't beat Ohio State and you can't beat Michigan State, you're not going to hang around too long in Michigan.
Yeah, in spite of your crazy, kooky act, okay? That worst thing when you don't beat the guy you're supposed to beat. And again, he's got that kind of abrasive personality that his act wears thin on people if he's not winning. Well, if he's winning, he's a snake charmer. When he's not, he becomes a kook. What's the difference between a snake charmer and a kook? The snake charmer is winning. The kook is losing. So they're the same person, two sides of the same coin.
This next year, if he doesn't beat one of those two teams, I don't think he's going to hang around much longer. He already had one player. They thought we were getting Urban Meyers and Nick Saban, and we got this guy, and he hasn't beat anybody. Lost in the bowl games.
Yeah, the only big, but he's like the only Big Ten team to lose in a bowl game. Yeah, he didn't.
Yeah,
they were on a little bit of a roll. All right, now I told you to get your crystal ball out and get ready to make predictions, because that's what media people do now.
Correct.
At the start of the year. Are you okay with being labeled a media person?
I am okay with being labeled a media person, so fire away.
Number one on the list is give me a prediction for North Korea. What happens in North Korea?
I think they're going to go back and forth dancing around. I don't see us going at it with North Korea. I don't know how it's going to end. I just don't think it's going to get into a hostile act.
Okay, so what do we dance over? Is it more of the
same?
And then weave into me, like right after the U.S. got sanctioned, which made big news. The UN came out and passed a resolution condemning the United States for recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The following day, almost as if to say, yeah, but we still love you, the UN enacted, with the support of China and Russia, stricter sanctions on North Korea. Since then, the South Koreans have seized two ships that have gone, a guy I have on the program by the name of Grant Newsham, when he talked about the block, you know, oil and things like that, he said, hey, look, there's ways to get around that. You have ships that turn off their transponders. They take on oil at sea from somebody, and then they drive it into North Korea and unload it. The fact that South Korea would begin seizing those ships isn't an embargo per se, but it kind of is. And North Korea hasn't uttered a peep about that. So in the midst of all of that, how does the North Korean thing play out in 2018?
I think it's we're going by a crystal ball. I think it's cloudy because it can go either way.
Wait. This isn't our crystal ball. This is your crystal ball, and we're going to see what kind of crystal ball you actually have.
Here's a plan. Nothing's going to happen between this month and next month because right now you've got North Korea. South Korea wants to talk to North Korea regarding the Olympics. They don't want anything to disrupt that Olympics because that would be a disaster for them. So then we move beyond the Olympics, so now we're at March. And I think the wild card in all this, I know we keep going back to this, it's China. I know China has some leverage. People say they don't have as much leverage as we think they do. I think they got more than they're doing. They're sending stuff on, you gotta imagine, North Korea's military, where do they get all their military equipment from? They don't build anything, they get that from Russia and China. And definitely China does not want a nuclear war on that peninsula at all, or even anything close to that. So I think what's gonna happen, somebody's gonna do some offhanded deal or something, and it's just gonna push it off for a while. I don't see any war in the Korean Peninsula this year.
Okay, so we're going to see more of the same, and tell me, how do you see the sanction thing? Do you see that getting more and more serious, or do you think that North Korea's most recent overture, in New York Times is reporting they're turning on the phone, they want to enter into discussions with South Korea about participating in the Olympics, as well as other dialogue. Is that a response to UN sanctions, or is that just him playing games?
I think it's him also delaying time, because the more the delay without anything changing on his nuclear program gives him more time to get that ballistic missile, to get the technology and perfecting it so they can put it on a ballistic missile that can carry it to the United States. But I see the sanctions gearing up each time. And what we do now is so far, but we go into the banking sector, really impact China and to a lesser degree Russia's business dealings with North Korea. Because they have to get their equipment from somewhere, and they're definitely getting it from China.
All right. So you see this more as, I think this is just me. I'm not looking into my crystal ball. We're looking into your crystal ball. Okay, so.
Well, thanks.
just so you know, this is being recorded. So at some future point, you might hear it again. Well, you now that
oh, I'm sure I will.
All right. Let's talk about give me one Marine Corps prediction.
Well, the Marine Corps prediction, I was looking up that when you sent over the point that you wanted to bring up. The Marine Corps prediction is going to be the budget. That's going to drive all four branches of the military services.
It does every year, so quit giving me boilerplate.
Well, no, but it does every year, but this one's different. The military cannot keep going off these continuing little budget resolutions. It's just destroying because what General Miller wants to do, there was something in the Marine Corps time, he's being curtailed by it because he can't expand what he wants to do because we never know what the budget's going to be any couple months. Usually, in a typical standard, they've been given a yearly budget so you can plan for it. The military can't plan for anything. And that means they can't do the modernization, they can't do the expansion, they can't do anything they want to do because what's their budget in 3 months from now? or 4 months from now, or next year.
I know, but let me tell you, you're just telling us things we already know. What we want to know is give me a prediction. In the midst of all that, what's going to happen? Give me one single Marine Corps prediction.
The Marine Corps is going to make some cutbacks, serious cutbacks, because they have no choice because of budget.
Cutbacks.
Yep, they're going to have to start cut back on the operating forces at some capacity. They're going to be making some budgetary cutbacks, not because they want to, because they have no choice. If they're going to meet their operational commitments, they got to start making some serious cuts.
Okay. All right. So now that was already echoed by Secretary Mattis saying that, you know, there was thoughts that the Marine Corps might move to from 184 to 194, which is essentially another regiment of Marines. But the Secretary of Defense said no, that job one is readiness, and that means modernizing the force, and until you modernize what you have, we're not going to expand it. So we're not going to spend our money on people. We're going to get the force ready again. So kind of
there's one thing they're doing to the infantry units. They're getting rid of their their O-351s, their assault weapons marines, and they're going to integrate that into the companies because they need more cyber marines. That was something General Miller
I don't understand that though. Okay, and so somebody needs to explain, like, okay, the whole cyber thing. What is that in combat? Okay, what is it? I get it on the national level. I don't so much get it. Is that us being hacked by when we go there? Our system's closed. So I don't. So this whole cyber thing, is it us conducting our own little cyber event when we go to Helmand Province?
I think it's a combination of both.
What is cyber relative to military operations? I'm not sure I understand it.
Well, if you remember what happened, what Russia did to when they invaded Georgia, they did it in 2008. Did a big whole cyber attack into the. I mean, I know their Georgian military is nowhere near what we are,
right?
But they're looking at all this stuff, and China is perfecting a lot of these cyber attacks because they know we're so dependent on our computer technology.
So relative to. And we're talking about, when we talk about Marine Corps cyber, we're talking about expeditionary units that go in and with, you know, Regimental Combat Team 1 in Helmand, there's cyber Marines. What are they doing? What are they doing that can't be done from CONUS?
That would be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
Is what?
What are they doing?
What's their mission of the cyber Marines or their cyber capabilities for the Marine Corps when it gets into the expeditionary role?
And you know what they're going to be doing, right? Yeah, because they're not blocked. They're going to be surfing all the porn sites and telling everybody else about it. Right? Because that's what Marines do. You're bored as hell on deployment. Let me just tell you, the Lance Criminal Network, there's a thing called the firewall that doesn't allow you to go to a whole series of
sites,
right? And
you're
so
correct.
The Lance Criminal Network, when this firewall would be down, all of a sudden you see guys on keyboards, like, what's going on? Sir, firewall's down. Like, oh my God, here we go. And they would find out. I don't know. Don't ask me how they find out about it, but they do. Firewall's down. Just burn it up. So yeah. Other than looking at porn sites, what are the cyber Marines doing?
That would be maybe good something to have on a quick segment on your show. Get somebody who can.
You're an expert. You're supposed to tell me. What do you mean? That's a good segment for your show, Mac. What the hell is that?
That is a good segment.
All right.
The next question.
Hold on, I got to pull out the agenda. So you're one, as opposed to people who think the Marine Corps is going to expand, you think that you're saying the Marine Corps will contract?
I would think they will contract due to budgetary constraints.
Wow. Okay. All right. Three, give me one prediction relative to the economy.
The economy is going to improve greatly. You're going to see this year coming up, we're going to see 3% growth for the first time since 2005.
So you're not buying the, you know, the bubble's about to burst, blah, blah, blah.
No, because this is what business community has always wanted. They wanted tax reform. They've got their corporate rates have dropped. Middle-class Americans are going to feel it. You'll see it this quarter coming up. We'll know for the fourth quarter of 2017, if we have over 3% growth, it'll be the first time we had three straight quarters of 3% growth in a number of years. And if that carries over into the first quarter, always the first quarter has always been the lag quarter. If you get over 3% growth in the first quarter, then there's no doubt in my mind we'll get 3% growth for the year.
All right. So you see continued big things. And as you know, as you hear the president say, hey, check out your 401k. There might be a lot of people that don't like him, but I will tell you what, there's no doubt. When you check out your 401k statement and you see that thing went boom, hello, that's like everybody feels that.
Well, remember, 2002, when I got on active duty in November of 2001 after 9/11. The first pay period was January for the new year. Bush had pushed his defense bill through. The military got the largest pay increase since 1981, and everybody looked at their pay stubs and were like, oh, my gosh, look at this. That's going to happen in the civilian world throughout the economy. People are going to look at their 401k. They're going to see their pay stubs have gone up, and they're going to be like, yes.
Yeah. So you may not like it. You may not like them, but there will be little doubt in terms of the impact that he has had on possibly your retirement. That's no small deal. That's a big deal to people.
But, Mike, I think the other thing is people voted for Trump. They don't like the guy.
Right.
They can't stand the guy. But they like the bottom line. People want the economy to improve. They want their lives to get better. And if Trump's the vehicle for him, I may not like somebody, but if he does good things, okay, I'll suck that up. Move forward.
All right. I'll ask you one more that I didn't include on the list I sent you. Well, the Trump investigation. What's going to happen with that?
Eventually, Mark Mueller is going to have to come out and say, I don't think they're going to have any proof. They're going to show any evidence to purport there was collusion between the Russia and Donald Trump or his associates. But the one thing that's going to come out, and we're going to see that coming up very shortly, is the FBI and the DOJ, how they handled their investigation into the Clinton email, Uranium One, and the Russian dossier. And it's going to show that the Justice Department and the FBI took evidence that was unsubstantiated to get a warrant. That's going to be the big story.
So just so you have this right, you think that the Trump investigation will ultimately bear no fruit, especially relative to the president. And on top of that, you think that there's two relatively interesting articles in the Drudge Report this morning. One is by The Guardian out of the UK, which is notorious for sensational journalism. Headline.
Yeah.
Headline, Trump Tower meetings with Russians, treasonous, Steve Bannon says, in an explosive book. Book is called Fire and Fury. It's written by Michael Wolff. Quote, according to Steve Bannon, quote, they're going to crack Don Jr. like an egg on national TV. So,
yeah,
that doesn't sound good. But anyway, so that story, and then there's this, another story on a more reputable news outlet, and I say news with quotations around it because you have to these days. And that that is a story written in a publication known as The Hill. And the headline is, Congressional Investigators Find Irregularities in FBI's Handling of the Clinton Email Case. And so I think, again, as you and I have talked before, there's more and more data points that keep pointing towards the FBI as not being the honest broker that I think all of us expect them to be, that they go into these investigations with no bias, and the truth leads where it leads, and justice is blind. And I think there's now too many data points, and I don't know how this will end, but in my opinion, there's way too many data points not to look into these things further. And
well, there is, but see, today, closed the business today, Devin Nunes, who's the congressman from California, he's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, he gave the FBI and the DOJ, by close of business, I want all those documents that we've been requesting since August. And my guess is if they don't give it to them today, they're going to start doing contempt, and they're going to subpoena each individual that's coming up. Then you've got Michael Horowitz, who's the DOJ.
Well, again, here's what I don't understand. I don't understand why this has taken so long. I don't understand why Congress and these committees, that's the way the American people, in theory, exercise oversight over these powerful organizations. I do not understand why it's taken so long. I don't understand why they've been so reluctant to issue subpoenas. To me, look, we want this information now, and if you blow us off, we're going to have your ass here, and we're going to send somebody to jail if we don't get it, and they can rot in jail for all we care. But I don't understand the arrogance of the FBI and the Justice Department in these cases, and I don't understand Congress's reluctance to bring them and lay the wood to them. So I'm curious about all that.
Mike, I'm with you. I followed this. You had Andrew McCabe was on. 2 weeks ago, he was up in front of a closed session of the Judiciary Committee in the House. He was asked about the dossier, and all he said was, well, we verified this guy went to Russia. Well, good, that's newsworthy. We knew that. I don't understand why the Trump administration doesn't order them, give them those documents. I don't understand why Democrats believe that, well, they have the right to do that. You're just fishing. Things switch the other direction. I don't care what party controls the Congress. You want documents from the agencies you oversee, give them up. Then you've got the Inspector General.
Let me just read one passage out of this article in The Hill. All right. For the first time, investigators say they have secured written evidence that the FBI believed that there was evidence that some laws were broken when the former Secretary of State and her top aides transmitted classified information through her insecure is probably the wrong word. In my opinion, that connotes like Master Guns Ubaldi is insecure about his whatever. I was going to say sexuality, but I shouldn't go there. That'd be harassment of some sort, I'm sure. But I don't do that as much anymore, except with my kids. So it would be unsecured private email server. Lawmakers and investigators have told The Hill. The evidence includes passages in FBI documents stating that, quote, sheer volume of classified information that flowed through Clinton's unsecured email was proof of criminality, as well as an admission of false statements by one key witness in the case, investigators have said. Now, again, that's astounding, as well as before key people are interviewed, the statement's already being prepared to exonerate the subject of the investigation, no matter who they are. And so to me, it's just, I think we all, when we look at the Department of Justice and the FBI, look, it's, you know, and again, I would say this, I don't care, and look, where the thing with Donald Trump leads, if Steve Bannon's right, throw Donald Trump Jr. in jail. I don't care.
I agree.
It doesn't matter to me. But Americans should look. Americans should look at the DOJ and the FBI, and know that they're honest brokers. And to the extent that the games are getting played, that can't happen at those two places. And those people should be held up. They should be made example of. And we should not tolerate that in any way, shape, or form.
I 100% agree with you. And the one thing I tell people, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It's the country that we swore an oath to the Constitution. I have my political views, like you have your political views, but I'm not putting those above my country. And I still don't get how all this, and the way they describe it, like I know Catherine Herridge mentioned on Fox, there's a pass-through. From the top secret of the classified realm to the other. There is no pass-through. How did classified material end up over here? There's no way. You and me know they do not connect. And then when you've got Uma Abedin sending this stuff to her husband, and she wasn't charged, but yet she lied about it, they didn't charge her, but they went after Michael Flynn like a vengeance. If he lied to him, that's fine. If he pled guilty, yeah, he should be charged for that. But why do you go after one person but not the other?
Yeah. No, I get it. It's vexing. And again, what it oozes of is some kind – without the footnotes, it oozes of some kind of favoritism. And again, it's just icky. And again, even if you say, okay, look, this is a lot of Fox News people and conservatives pushing back and using, you know, Hillary and her book tour to just pummel the Democrats every chance they get, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, you know, that there isn't much of a story here and there's nothing new here. So even if you say, okay, there's certainly some of that going on, and I'm not a partisan. I don't play that game. I'm a conservative, but I don't play political games.
Yeah.
Even I would say there's too many data points near the FBI and the Department of Justice that don't pass the sniff test. And for instance, I'll give you two that make you two others that make you you know, wince when you see them. You had the number four guy at the Department of Justice, his wife,
yeah,
on the payroll. A Fusion GPS that produced this stuff? And he met with them? What? I mean, come on. Like, how is that guy still in any position, right, relative to the investigation? Like, what in God's name is going on? The other one is that is so far outside the bell curve. You're just looking like, what's going on, man? I don't understand that. The other one is, you know, again, by all accounts, Robert Mueller is the guy, right? But when he puts his team together, there should be a balance of people that contributed to the Clinton campaign, people that contributed to conservative causes, maybe even contributed to Donald Trump. There should be some balance in that. And when you don't see that, it leaves you scratching your head saying, does he not understand that his whatever he finds is not going to be looked at as legitimate by a lot of people because of the people involved in it?
It won't even be able to stand up in court because you have the lead investigator for the collusion investigation on Robert Mueller's staff was having an affair with the lead counsel on his staff.
Yeah, but you know what? I will tell you this. It'll stand up in court if it's factual. But
the
perception, But the perception that he creates by the way he composes gives fuel to people to throw mud at the investigation, which makes his job more difficult.
The reason I say it won't stand up in court, whether it leaves a certain way, is because the investigators had a pre-decided bias, much like what happened, it maybe not be the greatest example, during the O.J. trial. You had Mark Furman, who they found out he was racist, and it was a bias toward this. And you start to lose your credibility. How is the guy that's your lead investigator was sending text messages condemning Donald Trump, how he was an idiot, March of last year? He's the one that's writing the exoneration letter 2 months before he interviews the principal, Hillary Clinton. He interviews Hillary Clinton, doesn't swear under oath, doesn't record it, doesn't do any of the procedures that the Hill mentioned. Then in March and in August, he's sending an email to that female legal counsel referencing Andy, and I think people are speculating it's Andy McCabe. We've got to have an insurance policy in case Donald Trump wins. What part of people don't have a problem with that?
Yeah, I don't. Again, this is what I mean by too many data points, right? You know, I mean, because if Mueller's defense is, hey, these are the most qualified people, blah 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 blah, then the retort to that is, but surely there's qualified people who didn't contribute to her campaign. Yes, you need to get off your dead ass and find them. In fact, if I was Mueller, that's what I would say as I look down the roster and my internal affairs person comes and says, okay, before you meet candidate XYZ, they donated to the Clinton, you know, campaign, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I think as the head of the investigation, I, Robert Mueller, there is a plethora of investigators he could have hired.
No, there was, but I would look at it one thing. If Robert Mueller was putting his team together, you knew this was going to be a very highly charged investigation on both sides. So I would have made sure, I would have interviewed everyone and done background and said, did you contribute to a Democrat? Did you do anything politically to make sure that so we don't taint this investigation? And then you've got Andrew McCabe, the number two of the Justice Department. He doesn't recuse himself or mention that his wife gets about $700,000 from Terry McAuliffe, who's the right-hand man to the Clintons, as she's running for a Democratic Senate seat.
No, look, I get all that. I just don't even – and I guess my point would be this. So if you're somebody who's a moderate, I think that – because the two sides, first of all, if you're conservative – you would be pointing at this going, see, we told you, Hillary Clinton, she's a scumbag. She always has been. She and her hick husband are the dirtiest things that have rolled into D.C. since, I don't know what, all right? Yeah, since Deep Throat, the movie opened, or some craziness like that. And then you have Democrats saying more of the same, you know, they're just hating on Hillary Clinton. I think if you're a moderate and you try to dial out the shrill from the left and the right, for moderates, you even look at this and say, what's going on there? Because it doesn't sound right. Exoneration statements, people with agendas, none of this sounds right to me. And what's going on inside the Department of Justice? What's going on inside of the FBI? And so I think that'll be interesting. Let me take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you, get your thoughts on Iran. Iran got treated with kid gloves by Barack Obama. And over the course of the new year, violent protests, people have been killed reportedly. Yesterday, more than 20 people killed in clashes between protesters and authorities. So we're going to take a break. John Ubaldi, Master Gunnery Sergeant, United States Marine Corps, retired, principal of Ubaldi Reports. You can find that on the web. You can find it on Facebook. You can find him on Twitter. He's everywhere. He continues with us. He's got his crystal ball out, and we're going to talk about Iran. That coming up next. Phil Smith joins us at the top of the hour, so don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio, our first program of 2018. An email. Those of us with blue nipples and shriveled scrotums in the Rust Belt will not submit to someone sitting in Costa Mesa. Welcome back. Then here's another one that endorses you. Master Guns is spot on. Distraction and transference stories are already being launched in the mainstream media. CBS led with one this morning. Let me just tell you, if the economy keeps going good, you know, then that's fine. It's going to be tough to get him out of the Oval Office.
Well, it's going to be two things. If the economy does well, he's going to do really well in the election. But if more comes out and they have that smoking proof that the DOJ and the FBI gave Hillary Clinton all these breaks, that's going to reinforce that the swamp needs to be drained.
The swamp. Nobody's draining the swamp. The swamp can't function if the swamp is drained. Right?
Well, to the average American who they realize if that was their kid who was like that Navy sailor who took a picture on a nuclear sub, yeah, he was wrong. He didn't have any intent to distribute. He sent it back to his family. He was in prison for a year, got a dishonorable discharge. I know Donald Trump mentioned him, I think yesterday or day before yesterday. Why is it they went after him like a vengeance? But Hillary Clinton did a massive amount of data on an unsecured network, and nothing happens to her, Uma Abedin, Cheryl Mills, when there was clearly classified material.
Okay, well,
but nothing happens to them.
Here's one point of explanation before from an email. I've heard you guys talk about quote unquote cross-decking information between classified and non-classified. Can you explain how that might be done? All right, yes, I can. And Master Guns, you hop in here and fill in anything I don't.
Okay.
In 2004, when I went to Iraq, there was changes made to our computers. And one of the changes was, when I first got there, anybody that had what was called a thumb drive could plug it into a classified computer and save documents to the thumb drive. So it was the advent of the CD to record data, and it was the advent of the mobile storage device that caused this. Okay, so you could save files to them, and if you had to go to a brief and you wanted to plug them into another secret computer, you would do that, pull up your brief, give the brief, come back. And so what they did was they disabled all those functions in 2004. You can't write to a CD. Okay, only with certain permissions, only certain computers can write to a CD. You can't save to an external hard drive. Okay, there's a program that is a system program on your computer that does not allow that. Okay, so that's what they did to stop the proliferation of classified material onto mobile platforms, CDs, thumb drives that could then be plugged into the unclassified system, which connects to the global internet and be sent.
Correct.
Okay? So that's how those two systems were separated. Okay, once those systems are separated like that, then what would have to happen for classified material? So there's daily message traffic that we all read on classified computers. when we're overseas, you tend to have two computers that sit right next to each other. One is a blue line and one is a red line. The red line is our classified stuff, and they simply do not connect. So for something to go from one to another, you would either have to have a computer that has the permissions to write to external media. You would save those documents to that media, and then you would simply move it over to the unclassified side and send it. Okay? That is expressly forbidden and is a crime. You cannot,
it is a crime.
You cannot do that. Or the other thing that you could do is you could go ahead and you could take screenshots with your cell phone, literally taking pictures of messages and sending those. Or you could go ahead and sit there and transpose messages, looking at one screen, typing it onto another to move that data. So those are all different ways that that information could be moved from one system platform to another platform. But it is done deliberately with intent to circumvent the laws of the United States, specifically those laws devoted to security and espionage. Okay.
Well, the one thing that also needs to be added, what you said about the screenshot on your cell phone. You're not allowed to bring any electronic devices into a secure building or room. So every time we went into a secure building, for your listeners, your phone had to be left outside. You can't bring it in at all. And then what you said, when you're in Iraq, when I was in Afghanistan, you had your secret computer next to your unclassified computer, but your top secret computer, that was in another separate room. So this idea, the only way someone could move it is someone had to do that intentionally, because there's posters everywhere. You go through training all the time how to handle classified material. So this idea was a mistake, doesn't fly water, doesn't play.
Okay, so here's the next question. How do political appointees view classified material? Do they have to go to a specific location? Is there any situation in which very high-level government officials have both classified and unclassified access at their desk? And the reason I say that is because if you're in your office or in your cubicle, that privacy allows you to do bad things. So my question is for Senate and political appointees, you know, for congressional and other political appointees and staff, do they have those two systems resident on their desktops in Washington D.C.? Or do they always have to do what we have to do when we're back in CONUS, which is you have to go down and you have to check into the vault, if you will, right? And then, you know, you're logged in, you're logged out, your cell phone is left outside, yada yada yada. Do those rules apply on Capitol Hill?
Yes, they do. Now, here's the thing is, there's a retired full-board colonel who was in intelligence. He worked at the NSA. When you're in Congress or the Senate, there's a room for you to review and look at classified material. If you have to access it, you have to go over to the SCIF, which is in the White House. So when they go to the White House, they're not going to see the president. They're going to the SCIF. So they can view and access all the classified material. They do not have two computers, one classified, one unclassified, in their office. They have to go to a secure room. And that's the same thing like a Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense. They're going into their offices in a secure room. So they'll be able to access that. I'm not sure about the top secret stuff. But they would have access, just like when we were on active duty, the chief of staff for the different commodity sections, they had the secret and unclass in their office, but they were in a secure area. And if they wanted to go to the top secret, they had to go to another room to go view that top secret.
All right. I need to find out more about how they view and how many different sites, because what you're talking about is and that's why this is a big deal in terms of the getting around it. All right. I'm not going to have time to ask you to take a break and then ask you about Iran. So let me just ask you for a prediction. I know Iran wasn't on my list of predictions, but give me your thoughts on Iran going forward. Is there trouble in Iran? Obviously there is. And to what extent? Do you think it'll be a factor in 2018?
It's a problem now, but it's not as big as it was in 1979 or 2009. And it's coming from the rural community. We'll have to see, given another month or two, we'll have to see how pervasive it is. If it is another Arabic Spring type moment, we'll have to see. It's still way too early. And Iran's got too much levers with its security and its military apparatus. They've really clamped down after 2009. So it's still too early to say what direction this is going.
All right. So now get out your crystal ball and tell me, what's going to happen?
If this keeps going, it's going to be a big problem for Iran, because I think people are...
No, that's if. That's conditional. You have to make the prediction.
I would say it will be a problem for Iran, because the reason it's a problem is they got money. When Obama gave them all that extra money, unlifted the sanctions, that helped them on one respect, but oil prices have been kept extremely low because the United States is now an oil exporter. So you've got Russia, you've got Iran, and Venezuela, all countries that are predominantly one commodity economies like oil. Their economies are in shambles because they relied on that and they mismanaged their economy.
Love that.
So if this kid continues, this is going to be a big problem for Iran.
All right. Is there anything else you want to share with us now that we've entered 2018?
I would say be prepared for something that nobody's looking at, and I think Venezuela is another one that we should be keeping our eye on.
Because
that country is about ready to implode if it hasn't imploded already, and how that will impact South America, Central America, and that Caribbean region. So you always look for the unexpected crisis.
All right. So you say Venezuela.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
First of all, tell everybody where they find your work.
You can go to Facebook at Ubaldi Reports. I'm on Twitter at Ubaldi Reports. And also go on the web. Just go to UbaldiReport.com and you can find me.
There you have it. Retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi predicting here at the start of 2018. All right, Master Guns, hope it warms up for all you sissies in Florida. Suck it up. remember, until you get to 10 below, don't even call me. I'm not even going to deal with you.
Oh, the last thing, you got that information I sent you on that female Marine about maybe making an interview.
I did.
I
will give her a call.
You got it. All right, take it easy, Mike. Have a great year.
All right, thanks. Have a great day. We'll talk to you. That is Master Guns John Ubaldi. We're going to take a break. Phil Smith is going to join us next, and we're going to talk to him about some of the same issues, get his thoughts on where this all winds up. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.